Okay, we're on Mem Vav Amid Aleph. We're dealing with a machlokes. If women get stoned, we know that men get stoned. We had a machlokes, women getting stoned. And they were trying to bring a proof that says, how can you say that women don't get stoned? We see that Reb Shimon ben Shetach hung women in Ashkelon. Right? Well, if you tell me women don't get stoned, how did he hang them in Ashkelon? So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you why. Mishnah said, don't bring a proof from that, because we know that you're not allowed to hang, you're not allowed to kill more than one person at a time at best, and in one day, and he killed 80. So you see, it was already a Horah Shah. So it's the same thing over here. It was a Horah Shah. It was emergency measures. So since it was emergency measures, you don't bring a proof from that which is emergency measures. So on that part now, the fact that we were just Mishnah parenthetically said you don't kill more than one person in one day, the Gemara is going to analyze that aspect of not killing more than one person in one day. So Amar Rav Chista, Rav Chista comments on this idea that you may not try two capital cases in one day. He qualifies that statement. He said, Lo Shanu, that ruling that you don't kill two people in one day, it's Elabishtei Misos. That's if we're involving two cases that are dealing with two different methods of execution if the person is guilty. Two separate methods of execution we don't do on one day. But two separate cases, but they're being judged for the same type of execution, Dunin we judge. What's the difference? It's two people anyway. So the commentary says, the reason a court may not judge two capital cases on the same day is to maximize the chance of someone being... the chance of someone being executed by mistake. An error is likely to occur, though, only if two different types of cases are tried, since much effort is needed to try each case, an error might be made in the process. However, if the two cases involve identical punishments, less effort is required for the second case, hence we need not be concerned about the possibility of error. That's a very difficult svara, because even if it's two similar death penalties, it could be two separate types of averos. But anyway,
you know in advance what kind of judgment would be made.
No, you know what the crime he's being accused of, and if he's convicted, you know what the death. It's not like in secular courts. You don't know what the punishment's going to be. There's the judgment, and then the judge decides what he's going to do.
Right.
In Torah law, it's not so. If it's a case, was he mechalal Shabbos or not? We know what the punishment will be. It's stoning. If the person was worshiping idols, we know what the punishment is. So that's the point. So if it's two separate, Gemara is saying, if it's two separate punishments, it's too much separate work involved, which I find difficult, but that's what Gemara answers. So Gemara is saying, well, wait a minute. So let's see. So now you're saying, well, not the only time we don't do it if it's two separate punishments, right? Now we go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, well, you see, Shimon ben Shatach killed more than one person. But wait a minute, what's the proof from there? It's all the same crime, the same punishment. So how are you proving it's something different? And that's what Gemara now says. V'homai said to Shimon ben Shatach, the story of Shimon ben Shatach, the Misa'achas, so it was one punishment. Even if it's 80, but it's all one crime. They're witches. So why did the Gemara say, why did the Mishnah say, well, you can't bring a proof from Shimon ben Shatach? He already broke the rules. So it was an emergency measure. He wasn't breaking any rules according to what we're defining, because it's all the same death. The Kamerland, I'm finishing up the question. The Kamerland, and they said in the Mishnah, they ain't done it. We should not have judged more than one case on that day. So what's he involved with? Hang on. What was the question? So the more answers, I'll tell you what. Ela Itmar, Hachi Itmar. Rather, if you want to say Rav Chista's statement, let's modify Rav Chista's statement when we say what we say. Lo Shana, we only said this rule, Ela B'misa Achas Ke'ein Shtei Misos. They taught this law only in regard to a single method of execution that is similar to two methods of execution. What does that mean? What's going on? Kigon shtei averos. A person does two different transgressions, even if they're punishable by the same method of execution. That's when we don't say it. In other words, the example is this, is where one person is accused of desecrating the Sabbath, another is accused of worshiping idols. Each sin is punishable by the same form of execution, namely stoning, but still the transgressions themselves are different. That was what I was telling you before. That makes sense. Thus, one court may not try both offenders on the same day. In which it could be the same execution, but it's different crimes. Different crimes we don't do. Avol misa achas, but one death. Vavera achas, but and with the same transgression, the two people are accused of desecrating the Shabbos. Each one's the same, and each one's punishable by stoning. That dunning we do. So that's the point. So that now that makes sense now. If it's two, as long as it's two separate cases, okay. All right. So now if it's you can only judge two people if it's exactly the same crime that has the same death penalty. But if it's two separate crimes and two separate death penalties, then that would be the same thing. So
can't be judged the same day.
They can. If it's the same crime, they can. So musti Rav Ada Bar Ava. So now the Gemara challenges based on the following brisa. It says, "Ain dunim shnayim biyom achad." One court may not judge two capital cases on the same day. And look what it appears to be: the same vafilu benoif and oefes, even an adulterer and adulteress. Now, why couldn't you do that? It's the same punishment. Answer is: not all cases of adulterer and adulteress get the same punishments. There's a couple that it's different punishment, even though they both do the same aver, it's different punishment, right? So Tirgum Rav Chista explains, you know what I mean? Babas Kohen Ubala, when the daughter of a Kohen and the person who is cohabiting with her, the Torah tells us the Bas Kohen gets Shrefa, she gets burnt, while the male partner is killed like any case of adultery, which is Chenek, strangulation. So certain cases of adultery have two separate judgments. Or another case, Obabas Kohen v'zomame zomamim, or a Bas Kohen, where there were, zomamim, who were zomified, where they're going to be punished like the man and not like the woman. When a Bas Kohen, she cohabits illegitimately, she gets burning, the man gets strangulation. Now let's say there were false witnesses who testified on both of them. And now we have to judge the Bas Kohen and the false witnesses. What punishment did the false witnesses get? Because they wanted to have the woman killed and the man killed. The woman would get burning, the man would get strangulation. Well, we'll learn, if we get there, about five chapters from now, tells us that they get a punishment they wanted to give the man and not the woman. So the Bezna said, judge, the Bas Kohen, all right, and then there's Zomamim, it's Zomamim on the Zomamim. Not going two steps. Okay, there were guys, Zomamim A, but if we let them off, if we convict them, she's innocent. So, you know, but if you want to kill both, they're Zomamim, and then Zomamim come on the Zomamim who zomified the other guys, who want to get the other guys killed. So on them, who they want to give them to get the punishment of the man, there's two separate punishments. So it is possible that you wouldn't judge those two cases on the same day because it's two different death penalties. Tanya, we learn in a now. We said that Shimon ben Shetach, he wasn't going according to normal procedures. All right. So when do we allow to do emergency measures? Tanya, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Rav Yaakov says, Shemati, I heard, Shebezdin makin va'onshin shalom in Esra. There are times that a bezdin may punish someone. Let's say give him lashes. And give capital punishments, even though that's not mandated by the Torah. We will see. The law, lavar al divrei Torah, they didn't mean to transgress the rules of the Torah, but rather the courts are entitled to do this. Okay, they lasso shogel Torah to make a fence around the Torah and safeguard its laws. In other words, a court just can't arbitrarily say, well, you know, we don't like the guy, we're going to kill him. No, they say there's, even though according to the letter of the law, Torah law would not allow us to kill him. We feel that the Jewish people are denigrating Judaism and mitzvah observance in general, and therefore we have to go more than what the law requires to ensure that others don't follow up what's going on over here. They have to be afraid. because, you know, in other words, maybe people are now, you know, you have like quote unquote liberal Orthodox beyond the pale. So, well, listen, you know, according to our law, without a warning, you could do it. So we're now encouraging all our membership to do this sin, but we just won't warn them so they won't get killed. You know, I mean, we've seen there's enough ways you can abuse the Torah if you intentionally want to. So Rabbi's got to step in and say, no. You think you're going to do that even without witnesses, even without warning? You're going to get killed. Now, the Torah doesn't mandate that, but they're doing that to protect the Torah, because otherwise we'll be sinning. Here's a couple stories where you see this. One story, a man was riding on a horse on a Shabbos. You may have run him during the times when the Greeks were controlling us. This was prior to the miraculous Hanukkah story. So now what's the punishment if a guy rides a horse on Shabbos? What is the punishment? The correct punishment. What's the transgression? What's the punishment?
Nothing.
What?
Malka?
What is the sin he's done? Let's get to that's. How is he Michal Shabbos riding a horse? Are you not? You're allowed to ride a horse. You might. And what if he didn't? So what did he violate? Let's go back. What he violated a rabbinic law. Okay, what should the punishment be when you violate rabbinic law? Rabbinic lashes, even. Not just lashes, not biblical lashes, rabbinic lashes. That would be the proper law, rabbinic lashes. But what did they do? They stoned him. Okay? Now, lo mitnei shiro lekach, not that he was fitting to get that according to Torah law. Ela shas shot shrich lekach. The times needed for the bezdin to go beyond what they had to do. Why? Because the Greeks were trying to stop the Jews of keeping Torah mitzvahs. And the people becoming much more lax in their mitzvah observance. It wasn't fun being a Jew. People say, you know, let's not take it so seriously. So the rabbi said, we have to stop this. Whenever they killed him. All right? Another story, there was another story with a person. A man cohabited with his wife out in the open under a fig tree. You know, right in the middle of Center Island, whatever. You know, right under a fig tree. Right? So now, technically, that's not a punishable offense.
No.
Nothing should happen to them. A husband's allowed to be with his wife. Yeah. But out in the middle of the street is not exactly, you know, a good thing. They brought the bezin, the hilku, and they lashed them. Okay, now they didn't kill them.
But him or hurt them.
What? Him they lashed him. Sorry, lashed him. Not that he was supposed to get lashed, but Elashat saw Srich Lakach, the times needed it, because obviously it must have been a lot of lewdness, and they wanted to stop that from happening. They probably, you know, were thinking of doing a Woodstock festival the next week, and they figured they would stop that right away. Believe me, if they would have gone to Woodstock and start lashing people, they would have stopped it. But, you know, that was, if you look historically, that was a tipping point in American history. Was that, what, 68? I don't remember. Something in the 60s.
You know,
it was late. That was a turning point, and you're getting all the benefits of it now with the crybaby liberals, the snowflakes. When you have Woodstock 50 years ago, you get snowflakes 50 years later. They can't handle anything. Anyway, parenthetic point, and if the government would have done something a little bit more, you know, I mean, they were obviously violating laws. Even in American law, you don't fornicate in a public park when there's tens of thousands of people there. You don't do it. And they just said, well, just let it go. So anyway, you see the wisdom of this Gemara over here that you're not supposed to let these things go. Okay, end of the Gemara, new Mishnah. What?
The abuse of this. They decided to kill this one guy because they say the times call for it. I mean, it can be very haphazard.
Okay, so who is making these decisions?
Sanhedrin.
Yeah, and would you say that the moral turpitude of the Sanhedrin is on a much higher level than anybody you know?
Yeah.
Would you compare them to any politician you know? Any judge that you know?
To decide that, okay, we're going to kill this guy because the time's a man, and the guy who did it 10 years earlier didn't get killed. Somehow the guy 10 years later doesn't get killed because...
Because circumstances.
You might say that this guy did this because it was so the Greeks putting so much pressure on people, so maybe
that's why they tried to stop it. That's
so
exactly right.
The Greeks. I'm just saying, to me, it could be a very... It's a suspect to abuse of power.
Okay, so Shelley, here's your mistake. You think that the Chachamim are like a little bit better than Barack Obama. Is a little bit better than your politicians here. You have to know the Chachamim were like Malachim.
They
were like, they do as is required. And Hashem in the Torah has invested them with that power and that responsibility to do that. Hashem has said, Chachamim, you have to make judgment calls as you best understand it. These Chachamim are not there
to debate each other all the time.
Good. So fine. And then they come out to a resolution. The Torah says, there's Torah rules, you go after the majority. We need to put 71 of the holiest people on the planet to make a decision. God says we go with the majority opinion, and that becomes Torah law. I think you still view them as just regular human beings who are just a little bit better than others. They are like angels. Not brilliant. They are angels. The Navi says that when a Chacham is like a Malach, then you learn from him. They are like angels. So therefore, and we have to have a rule of law based on Torah law. And Hashem says, I'm putting it in their power to do it. Okay, this is not like the Supreme Court Raid versus Woe or Wade versus Roe. Well, this time we say this is okay, and 10 years later we don't. Just because of public opinion. Just because of politics. It doesn't go that way. You're not talking about those kinds of people. These are people who are tremendously sensitive to the spiritual environment. They can feel the mystical waves that are coming there. So they, you know, and it's hard for you to understand it, and many of us understand it, but you have to understand they are divine beings, and they totally understand these things. No, they're not. That's the point. They are human beings. They are human beings in the divine image of God and are given godly understanding of things. Okay? And that you have to accept.
Then why would they disagree with each other so long?
Because there's 70 faces to the Torah. Hashem told Moshe himself in Halacha there's many ways to look at something, and you'll decide with a majority vote of how it is done. And that, and Hashem says, and that will be the Ratzon Hashem. That will be the Ratzon Hashem. It's not like Supreme Court judges and all these things who just come with their own frailties and biases. We're not talking about that. We're talking about people who are thoroughly knowledgeable in every aspect of Torah and are thoroughly connected to their divine souls and have a thorough understanding of realities. And there are 70 ways to look at it till when it comes to the world of halacha, till it's rendered in halacha the way they decide. All right, a little bit of a stretch for some of us to accept. And that's the only reason why the Jewish people have survived till today, because of those judgment calls. Had Rabbi Yehuda Nasi not decided 1,700 years ago to go against the Torah and say to write down Mishnayos and Gemara, there'd be no Jewish people today, period. Who gives him the right to do it? God does. And he made a divinely correct choice. And we can go through many examples throughout history where we've had to do that, and had it not been done, would there be a Jewish people today if we have no Gemara and no Mishnayos? There'd be no Jewish people left. Okay? So that was a big call he had to make. And he was a divinely inspired person to make that call. You have this time and time and time again. So you have to accept, you know, even on a lower level, we're not talking about Sanhedrin, the Gedolei Hador post-World War II Europe, had they not decided to open up day schools around the world, we would all be like the Reform and the Conservative today. And there'd be no Yiddishkeit today. And they made a very unpopular call. The quote-unquote balabatim of the world said, what are you building schools for? No, the Conservative, we're going to build temples and synagogues. We don't want that old-fashioned Europe Torah. Let's not do it anymore. The consensus of Americans, Jewish Americans, we don't want Torah institutions in America. That's a fact. And those stubborn rabbis said, no, we're going to learn Gemara Mishnayos. We're going to make scholars. That's why there's Yiddishkeit today. So we have to understand that they're not abusive in what they're doing. The Balabatim don't like to be told what's the Torah view, but that's the way it is. So it's the same thing over here. Okay, end of Moshe Shmuz. Okay, Mishnah. Ketzad Toilin, I say. Let's go to the next part. Once a guy is hung, the question is, we didn't get into the details. How do we hang the guy up? Remember, he's killed, but now we hang him up. So how do we hang him up? Well, first you have to have a piece of wood. So, meshakin es ha-kayra baris. They sink a post, take a big post of wood, vertically to the ground. Okay. V'ha-eitz yotze, and a beam protrudes from it. So we got a cross beam is attached horizontally close to the top of the post. So it extends outward. So you got a beam, you know, a havdol, you know where they got what they got from. Okay, they couldn't think of anything on their own. They have to copy everything they have. But it's a gallows like that. Okay, for obvious reasons why you have to have the cross beam, because you're going to tie a rope to it, and the rope has to stay on to the cross part. That's where the rope will hang. Umakif shtei yodav zu'al gavza. The hangman brings together the two hands of the corpse, one upon the other, on the top of that cross beam there. V'toyosa hangs him by his hands from the beam. So his hands are tied together. The end of the rope is then tied to the beam and the corpse hand. So it's not hanging by the neck, any of that stuff. You're hanging by his arms. He's just suspended up in the air. That is the opinion of the Tanakama. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi disagrees slightly. Hakoira muto ala koisel. The post is leaned on an angle against a wall. Okay, against the wall. V'toyla oso kederach shehatabachim osen. And he hangs him on the way that butchers do, like a piece of meat. According to Rabbi Yossi, the beam is not sunk vertically in the ground. Rather, it rests diagonally against a wall. A rope dangles from it on which the body is hung. Okay, so two different ways. I don't know why, but two different ways.
Yeah, how does he die?
He's dead already. Oh, remember, you keep forgetting. You only hang a dead man in Yiddishkeit. He's been stoned. He's been whatever. You only hang a dead man. Right? And guess what? Not very long. Umatir no so miyad. And after he's hung, they untie him immediately, and then they bury him. Okay, just for a very brief time, and not very long.
I thought that was the purpose, to show the people what's
okay,
going
so
on.
They show, you don't or have to show very long. Remember, on the other side, as terrible as this Russia is, that he's Chayv Misa, he still is in the image of God. So we don't do this for very long. Just for a short period of time. Just so it's publicized, they see it, that's it. It's not enough to sit there and gawk for hours and hours, just temporarily. Everybody who's there sees it, fine, take him down. Okay, and more than that, the imlon, if he's kept overnight on the gallows, over love below sase, the court has transgressed a negative commandment, as it says specifically in Torah, Shenemar, lo soli nivlos ala eish, you shall not leave his body overnight on the gallows. Rather, the Torah continues, ki kavar tikbarenu, you shall surely bury him on that day. Why? Because kilalas elokim, tolui, for a hanging person is a curse of God. We already gave a second interpretation, remember, that a guy who curses God gets hung, but the simple meaning is a hanging person is a curse of God. In other words, klomar, which means to say, mipnei mazeh toli. People are going to say, why is this person hung? Right? They're going to ask that, right? Now, look at, again, in their simple meaning, the verse's last words, kikilas elokim toli, means, for a hanging person is a curse of God. The Mishnah, however, expounds them to mean because he cursed God, he's hung. According to this, the reason why the hanging person dishonors God is because people who see the corpse hangers will say, because he cursed God, he's hung. And that itself prolongs the dishonor of God, as you're going to see in a minute. We're still going to know what he did. Because he blessed, that's a euphemistic term, because he cursed Hashem. Comes out, the name of God is profaned by his very presence on the gallows. So it's like a little ironic. On the one hand, you hang him up on the gallows, it's part of his kapara, and people should be afraid, but you don't want it too long, because people say, well, why was he up there? He cursed God. It was a person who cursed God, blah, blah, blah. So it's also negative, so to speak, that the person had the chutzpah to curse God for that. Because you kind of try to straddle the balance between the two, and you keep him up only briefly. Okay, now that we're talking about the fact that people get punished, and this is not something that Hashem is so happy about, that a hanging person is a curse of God. Amar Rabbi Meir, b'shah sha'ad mitzar, at a time that a person suffers for his sins. Shechina ma'alo shonomeres. What expression does the Shechina articulate? In other words, again, Hashem doesn't have feelings, as it were, but how does Hashem express his anguish for that suffering person? So Chazal say, koloni miroshi, koloni mizrosai. I'm burdened by my head and I'm burdened by my arm. As if to say, my head hurts, my arm hurts. It's as if, it's certainly not so, but as if Hashem's head and arm is hurt. In other words, Hashem really is very troubled. Why couldn't the person have been a good yid? I brought him in this world to give him pleasure. And if he would have just followed Torah mitzvahs, he would have had pleasure. Instead, he was a wicked person and ended up being killed. So Hashem wanted the person to be rewarded in this world. Instead, Hashem has to see one thing that he created is got hung and killed and has such a horrific ending. It pains Hashem, as it were, for such a thing. Look how the commentators explain. Rabbi Meir interprets the expression kilalas, a compound of two words, kal and lace. Kal means light, lace means not. Thus, when a person's hung, it's like Hashem said, I don't feel light at this time, which means I feel burdened. Okay? And there's much more from this. But the main idea is I had plans for this person. I wanted those plans to happen. Now, just like, the head is where the mind is. It's the plans. The zera, the hands, how things come out. So Hashem's, my mind, the plan was this guy should have an amazing life. And I was hoping that I could give him such an amazing life with my hands. So now my head and my hands, as it were, my thoughts and my wants and all that, and what happened just didn't work out. So you see, Hashem is not happy when these things happen. So Gemara now continues, Im Kain, if that's so, Im Kain Amokam Yisrael Dom Nishol Rishayim Shenishbech, if Hashem is so pained by the blood that spilled of the wicked, all the more so if a tzaddik suffers like that, Hashem has a lot of pain. Not only that, Amru, did the rabbi say this, referring to a corpse of a convict? Not only a convict who's kept overnight, but anyone who leaves a deceased relative unburied overnight transgresses a negative commandment. The Gemara is going to go into great detail about this. That's why it is very important, as much as humanly possible, to bury a person the day he dies. Unfortunately, secular Jews don't adhere to that. And people could die in the middle of the night, and they're not buried that next day. But rather, they leave it for 3-4 days. Anyway, but you see from here, no, everybody who dies should be buried. However, there's exceptions. Helino lechvodo, if one left the corpse overnight for the sake of his honor, meaning it was delayed for the deceased's honor, and the Gemara is going to explain a few blot from now what that means, then that's okay. Let's say, what are things, for example, you have to do? Lahavi lo'arim darchiv, you need a casket or shrouds. What if there's no casket? Right? How are you going to carry? No shrouds. So that's for his, it's a dishonor to carry up just the corpse without being in the thing. Okay. So Einrov, you're not transgressing for that. So it's just example, in other words. So there are exceptions, obviously. Okay? Velo hoyu kovrin oso. Or let's say another example. Now, next thing. The guy, the convict, besides he gets killed, there's other things, even after death he suffers. He doesn't get buried in his ancestral gravesite. In the olden days, the whole family, the whole mishpacha had a bunch of catacombs. Like, the whole family is here. So, and that's an honor to be buried with your family. If you're punished by Torah law, executed, you don't even get buried with the family. But rather, Elishtei Batei Kfaras HaYimusim Lesen. Bezin had two special cemeteries for those who were convicted of capital crimes, for higher violations and lessers. The lesser one is Achas L'Naragim L'Chakim, those who were beheaded or strangled, which are for less severe sins, were in one cemetery. And for others who were stoned and burned, which were higher crime cemeteries. He says, even amongst the Rishoyim, there's different levels of a rush of burial. Again, you see, it's very important. Who you are buried next to is important. That's why, again, I'm going to editorial comment. people say, why do I have to be a member in a shul? Well, one of the side benefits, besides being a member of a shul during your lifetime, which is important and enough for that, that's enough to be a member. But when you die, the synagogue provides you a burial plot in the shul section, where the shul has ensured there are only Jews buried in that section. Halachic Jews, every Jew, the 12 people that are buried in our cemetery, shouldn't be more, are all 100% halachic Jews. They may not all be tzaddikim, but they're halachic Jews. Unfortunately, it's not possible for Pardes Shalom to enforce this and get into political problems when there's other types of congregations who don't care about halachic Jews, and therefore they don't. And then we're dealing with a communal section, okay, where people aren't affiliated. A person calls up and says they go to Steele's and they want to be buried. Steele's calls up and asks for a plot. Well, what if this person's father was a goy and was converted to Reform, and this person, mother rather, converted to Reform, and what do you mean? I'm Jewish. The guy thinks he's Jewish. Halachically, he's mamish on 100% goy. And I hate to say it, but there are probably hundreds of goyim buried in the Jewish cemetery. Now, the guy in charge of Pardes Shalom wouldn't let that be, but there's no way you can, check out. You can't, when a guy dies, you can say, well, we're going to have to check your lineage and this and that, give us proof of that. It's not possible. If you would do that, it would take weeks till you'll bury anybody, and you have to bury people right away. So they kind of have to rely on it. It's just a reality. There's nothing you can do in the communal section. Therefore, if you're buried in the communal section, you could have neighbors around you that are mamish raina goyim. And you see from here how careful we don't want, one murderer next to a different kind of murderer, right? And who would want to be buried next to a goy? I'm telling you, a communal section, so people don't think they have to be members in shuls, because what do you have to be a member for? You need a rabbi for what? A rabbi for a bar mitzvah, what do you mean? We'll just have a rent the rabbi. He just comes in with his puzzle Sefer Torah, we'll read something, and he'll bless us in our house. And when somebody needs to get married, he gets any justice of the peace will marry us, and he'll just say a blessing. And when you die, you just call up and get a communal section. Right? That's what you get. So I'm just saying, so that's... There's what to be said. There'll be in the next bulletin. Our updates are going to happen. Just tell people that, you just can't. We just don't bear. That's why we check everybody. I have to ask personal questions when I want to be a member. It's I'm not just to let anybody in.
So is each section considered a separate cemetery?
Yes. So it's not like, I know what you're asking. So you're saying, what do you mean? There's going buried in the cemetery. But that's why you have demarcations. And that roads or other things, hedges, or more than four amas, it's a separate cemetery. So let's say the Westmount Shul, we're in a section, if you notice how the road goes, right? And there's three other groups are all Orthodox synagogues. That whole section is Orthodox synagogues. Well, if you just cross the road, my friend, just cross the road there, it's a communal section. So that's what to be said.
Rabbi, is that the reason that the Jews who commit suicide are buried
separately? Well, that's a separate thing. Yeah, yeah. That's because that's a really bad crime. Right. So you put them separately. All right. Yes. Okay, we're going to stop it here. We're in the middle of the Mishnah. Okay, we had a lot of interesting topics today.